It's a brand new week here at Georgia Public Broadcasting in Midtown Atlanta. That is, if you are listening to us in real time. If you're listening to us on the podcast, then who knows what day it might be, which is one of the interesting things about podcasting. Whatever you're doing, live or on the podcast, we're really happy that you're here today for Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Got a lot to talk about today. Let's introduce, before we introduce the panel, I want to do this before Tom Faust wags a finger at me from the control room and says, don't forget Augusta. We are going to be in Augusta, Georgia on Monday night, August 12th, doing our show in front of a live audience. We'll record it for Tuesday's Political Rewind, August 13th. We're going to be at the Jesse Norman School of the Arts. And we'd love to have you come out and join us for that show. This is going to be like our sixth remote around the state of Georgia in the last year, and we're really glad we're finally getting out to Augusta. Jim Galloway, you're going to be with us out there.
Great, yeah, that's worth the drive.
Harold Jones, legislator from that community, is going to be with us. He's first panelist, aside from you, that we've confirmed are going to join us. So just go to politicalrewind.org. You'll find a link where you can sign up for your free ticket. And do it now, because typically toward the end of the time before we go out to a given city, seats get a little bit harder to come by. We'd like to have you join us. Jim Galloway is here. He's the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read him on Wednesdays and Sundays in the newspaper. And you continue, Jim, to get up especially early every morning so that you can compile the Political Insider blog, which is, of course, part of AJC.com.
Over a couple cups of coffee.
Maybe three. Thank you for being here, of course, Jim. Across from you, if you're watching us on Facebook Live, is Darshan Kendrick, state representative from Atlanta. Hi, Darshan. How you doing?
I am good. Now, even though I was born in Atlanta, remember, I represent Lithonia and Stonecrest.
Thank you.
People will
DeKalb County. I am sorry.
And Gwinnett County. East DeKalb and South Gwinnett.
I apologize. I really apologize. Thank you for the correction. Julianne Thompson is with us. Julianne Thompson is a longtime activist in state Republican politics here in Georgia. You used to be an official in the state party. Now you've moved on to bigger and better things, Julianne. You were just named to the National, is it Advisory Council, Women's Advisory Board? How do you describe it exactly?
The National Advisory Council, or National Advisory Board for Women for Trump.
For Trump. And you were at a big meeting in Pennsylvania in which you all got together to talk about what?
It was the rollout for the Women for Trump Coalition, headed up by Laura Trump. We announced our advisory board. There's about 25 to 30 of us on the initial advisory board. And there were over 1,000 women in the audience. And in fact, the fire marshal had to close it off and not let anyone else in. And everyone else had to watch from outside because it was so packed with women. And the excitement was just overwhelming.
You are going to, though, despite that role, I know you will continue to look for ways you can get Republican women to run for office.
Absolutely.
In the state of Georgia. Yes,
absolutely. That's one of my primary goals.
Okay.
Mine too.
It's Eric Tannenblatt who just said that. Eric, of course, is a longtime strategist and a fundraiser for Republican candidates up and down the ticket, from candidates for president like George H.W., George W. Bush, Mitt Romney. He worked with Paul Coverdale back in the day when Paul was first a state senator and then ran for a federal office, national office. And you are the head of government relations for, yes, Denton's. We talked about this on the show on Friday. It's not like we have some special deal with your firm. It's just you, Eric, and a couple of your colleagues have managed to rope in all of the best political thinkers in the state. So you end up on our show. And you're Democrats and Republicans.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. So let's get going. A little bit later in the show, we'll talk about a little bit about how the Trump story of last week has found its way into a couple of incidents here in Georgia that were troubling and I think said a lot about the way in which we are on edge with each other here. But we talked a lot about Trump last week. Let's start with news that is closer to home here in Georgia. Jim, NBC released a SurveyMonkey poll that they conducted in states across the country, and they did in Georgia. It SurveyMonkey, as you know, is an internet polling tool, which means that it's not quite as accurate as a telephone poll, what we call a telephone coincidental poll. This poll, although it has well over 1,000 people, there are no screens for things like likely voters. It's just a general sample.
Right.
So we do have a couple caveats, right?
Right.
Nevertheless, it does give us, I think, some kind of interesting information. You want to go over some of it? If I throw some things out?
Yeah, toss out the numbers.
All right. And then I'll ask everybody to join in as we go through some of the numbers. I was interested in the fact, let me talk about the public policy aspects of the poll and start with this. Here's the actual question. In 1973, the Roe v. Wade decision established a woman's constitutional right to an abortion, at least in the first 3 months of pregnancy. Would you like to see the Supreme Court completely overturn Roe v. Wade or not? 37% said yes. Much bigger number, 59% said no. Now, Jim, they did not ask the question about the new abortion law here in Georgia.
No, they did not, and that's got to be, you got to consider that a failing, because what we're talking about is House Bill 481, which would require women to carry to term after 6 weeks or less or more. So it doesn't get to specifics. That's a question. What you read was a question that's been asked since 1973.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get at the kind of the tactics that are being used right now to get a case before the Supreme Court.
Yes, but it does, in fact, speak to the fact, Eric Tannenblatt, that what the supporters of 481, the abortion law passed in Georgia, have said all along is they were aiming to get before the Supreme Court where they hope the court will overturn Roe. This poll, it tracks with a lot of others that show that overturning Roe isn't as popular in Georgia as people might think.
Yeah, and I think as Jim said, the way the question is worded, would you like to see the Supreme Court completely overturn?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you really can't get an accurate read based on the way that question was asked.
So what does that mean? That perhaps people would say they want some additional restrictions to abortion? Would that be your supposition?
That would be mine.
Yeah, I mean, past polling has said I think 70% up to 70% of Americans, these are national polls, has said that they favor a woman's right to abortion with some restrictions.
Julianne, that does seem to be the case, doesn't it? And it's interesting because our law here really essentially outlaws abortion. And yet, as Jim points out, the national mood, at least, and perhaps the Georgia mood, is more inclined toward, you know, we're not altogether comfortable with abortion. We'd like there to be some more restrictions, but we don't want it overturned.
Right. I think that if people were polled more deeply on this, you would find more people weighing in on the fact that they would like to see restrictions on later term abortions, because I think that that's how the majority of Americans are polling, especially third trimester abortions. And it didn't really get into that. It used the word completely, which I think, I don't think you would see numbers any different by using that sort of terminology, because there is a general acceptance across the United States that they want to see some, and this isn't my belief, okay, I want to preface it by saying that, but there is a general acceptance across the United States that they want to see some form of legalization. However, there is a definite disdain, I believe, in the general populace for late-term abortion in the third trimester.
And of course, Darshan, Democrats like you are hopeful that the law which essentially outlaws abortion here, and which of course is still going to go through a lower court test before it maybe ends up at the Supreme Court, that because people do not favor outlawing abortion entirely, it's going to help you in the 2020 election cycle.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, as a Democrat, I'm always hopeful for that, but politics aside, I mean, I've been very vocal that aside from politics and hopefully gaining the House back, I see it more as a public policy issue focused on women and their health and their autonomy and all those decisions that come with being a full human being. So it might help us in the upcoming election. I hope it does, but I hope it also spurs a wider conversation about women's rights.
Let's talk about another question in here. Do you support or oppose removing Confederate monuments and statues from public spaces around Georgia? Again, Jim, this is a very broad question. And I guess when I look at these questions again in the light as we're sitting here on the air, it occurs to me that to some extent the writers of these questions did not drill down into, you know, the more into more depth in terms of what Georgians might be confronted with. So, for instance, well, let me just read you the figures on this. People either somewhat or strongly oppose removing Confederate monuments by like 56-58%, something like that, and only about 35-36% support removing monuments. But the reason that's a little bit too generalized is it doesn't take into, say, consideration somebody like a Michael Thurmond, who says, don't remove these monuments, put them in context.
Right, and the other question that it doesn't address is, of course, what is the public obligation toward these monuments, especially when they're on public ground, when they're on the face of Stone Mountain, when they're on the DeKalb County Courthouse Square. You know, if it's there is a difference between a monument being on private property and then a monument being on public property.
I also think too that it's interesting the numbers were almost the same when they questioned last year, and yeah. I think if you know we tend to in politics react to what's before us at that time. And you know, this is a Georgia figure, but you know I'm not the Charlottesville incident was that 2 years ago?
It was 2 years ago. That was 2017.
Yeah. So I think in 2017 the numbers may have been higher, mm-hmm. and then things sort of settle out. And I think you know 2 years of similar numbers. I think these are probably about accurate. I think it's like a 60-40 question.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're referring to the bill that we passed this past session that protects monuments. But to everybody's point, I think the question would have gotten a better response if you could have put it in context, because I just can't believe that 58% strongly oppose removing Confederate monuments, especially given all the sort of hyper-tensive perspective that we're in now with everything that's going on.
I think what a more interesting question would have been: does a local community have the right to decide whether a Confederate marker shall remain up or not?
Julianne? I agree. I think that would have been an excellent question.
All right. So what we're saying here around this table is that the numbers that I'm reading to you are less important than the lousy questions that NBC and the way they
We're just saying a certain amount of thoughtfulness might have done them better.
Well, I mean, just for a split second, going back to the abortion question, they didn't even mention life of the mother or health of the mother or rape or incest. So there's really no way to get an idea of how people really feel about
it. Okay, fair enough. I do want to take on a couple more aspects of this, and I'm really leading to the one question that I'm looking forward to hearing your response to. But before I get there, do you approve or disapprove of the way Brian Kemp is handling his job as governor of Georgia? There are four categories. Let me read you the four. And not try to somehow, you know, lump them all together. Strongly approve, 30%. Somewhat approve, 31%. Somewhat disapprove, 19%. Strongly disapprove, 18%. So, Jim, yes, if you lump together strongly and somewhat in each category, Kemp does pretty well.
In the same way
that he did pretty well in the poll from Morning Consult that we read about last Friday.
Right, just two things. Number one, we're not talking about registered voters. We're not talking about likely voters. The other part is the somewhat approve. I have not seen that in a polling question. Do you somewhat approve?
Yeah, what does that mean?
I somewhat approve of Bill Nygut, but I'm not going to endorse everything that you do. I'd be happy to go with that.
Oh, I don't know. I think Julianne somewhat and strongly are fairly standard buckets in which some polls are put. But what do you say about the fact that the new Republican governor seems to be polling pretty well based on two now polls, Morning's Consult and then this one?
Yeah, we're back to about a 60-40 again.
Yeah, I'd go more with the Morning Consult at 52.
Yeah.
It's an improvement, and I think it just shows that, you know, we're away from the election. He had went through his first legislative session. And I think the other number you have to look at in the poll, and I hope this isn't the question you were going to, but is the economy. People feel that the economy is going well here in Georgia. Yeah. And I think that really impacts the view of the governor, who's the chief executive of the state.
Darshan, we pointed out when we did the Morning Consult poll Friday, and Morning Consult is the polling arm of Politico, the online web political publication, which, by the way, gets a very high rating from 538, which is really kind of the gold standard in determining which polls are believable or not. And we pointed out that their polling of Kemp's popularity mostly didn't include the period. It was done largely before 481 he signed into law. And there's a sense that who knows how it's going to affect that standing, that law.
Yeah, that is definitely something I think is having an effect on the poll. But I also wonder, you know, sort of who are they asking and around what time this poll happened? Because, as you know, the governor is being very strategic, at least in the African-American community, which is 30% of the population, in appointing black judges and black DAs and black people in general. So I wonder if, when you say somewhat approve, you're thinking about that one friend they got appointed to a judgeship or something like that. Because I get the sense from the people that I'm around, and obviously I'm a lawyer, that people were happy with his most recent appointment, so they could have an effect on it.
But, you know, in this state, especially with African-American voters, if you look back in history, Republican office holders end up doing better with African-Americans after they've held office, and voters actually see what they do when they're in office, like the appointments that you just referenced. Mm-hmm. And I think Brian is, Governor Kemp is benefiting from that.
Mm-hmm. The only other individual that I want to talk about before I get to the question that I really was looking forward to hearing your answers to is the Trump approval numbers in Georgia, Julianne. The last time the AJC polled Trump, and this has been a while now, you had him way down in the mid-30s in terms of approval.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this was well over a year ago, I think, wasn't it?
I think it was probably January.
Okay, all right. So not quite as long as I had thought, but months and months ago. According to the NBC SurveyMonkey poll, his approval numbers, he's strongly approved 33, somewhat approved 15. So that's not bad. Somewhat disapprove. He's at 51% of disapprove or somewhat disapprove, and he's about 48 at approval. That's a much higher number than the AJC gave him, Julianne.
It is a higher number. And when it comes to Donald Trump, if there's one thing that we've learned, it's that you can't go by polling. I think we learned that in 2016. So I think that the numbers are good. And, I mean, I think that Georgians in general are happy with the economy. I mean, just talking to a lot of the people I speak with, I mean, they're excited. Over 6 million jobs created. 50%, I don't know if you know this or not, but 50% of all of the donations coming to the Donald Trump campaign are from women. And of all of the startup businesses, over 60% of the entrepreneur startup businesses are headed up by women.
I think we get the feeling, Darshan, that at this meeting in Pennsylvania, the Republican Trump women came up with some very good talking points to argue.
Oh, they're true. They are true.
I wasn't suggesting they weren't.
Yeah, well, you know, again, we can't rely on the polls, but, you know, I think that given our current demographic feel and the things that have been happening around the nation, I have made it a life mission to make sure Donald Trump is out of office by... 2020 or even before, which is a whole nother discussion.
Eric?
Yeah, well, I was going to say really the question that was not asked was comparing Donald Trump to any of these other Democratic candidates.
Yes.
Because I think that's where you really see the middle, the somewhat approved, the somewhat disapproved. I think if given a choice between Donald Trump and almost all of these Democratic candidates, I think you'll find that the state is still a right-of-center state.
Well, and that leads me to the question I was looking forward to hearing your thoughts on. If the Democratic primary or caucus in your state were being held today and the following candidates were running, who would you vote for? And here's what the Georgia results were. Joe Biden, 31%. Kamala Harris, 15%. Elizabeth Warren, 13%. Bernie Sanders, 12%. Pete Buttigieg, 5%. And then from there, it just falls off the earth. I mean, nobody after that has much more than 4%. Many of them have 0%. So, Darshan, Joe Biden, as he's done in so many other early polls of states, is holding on to a fairly commanding lead in Georgia. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. He started out, many people wanted him to run last time. So I'm not surprised he's the one with the most name recognition. Obviously, he has the friendship with our first and best president ever, President Barack Obama.
Wait, better than Abraham Lincoln, George Washington? Are you ready to go that
far? Okay, while I have been alive, and I haven't been alive that long, right? But that doesn't surprise me. He's still very, very strong with the African American community, still strong with the women bloc. So I think he's going to hold on to it. I'm not sure if he took a dip over his past remarks about working with segregationists, so it'd be nice to see those numbers.
No, I think he did. He's moved past that.
I think he did take a dip, but I think he's also benefiting from some kind of sobering thoughts on the Democratic side about what it's going to take to
right.
beat Donald Trump in 2020. I think this New York Times article that came out, I think, just as the weekend was breaking, which says that it's very much possible for Donald Trump to win re-election with the Electoral College and still finish up to 5% below in the popular vote.
You're right. Wow. The Times article, Jim, says he could lose the popular vote
and
by
I think
5 million votes,
wow.
two more
and,
than he did to Hitler, and still win.
And,
yeah.
and I think that's waking some Democrats up about who had previously been saying, oh, we can do this all from the left side.
I think y'all are off. I think it's way too early. I think all these numbers show it's just name ID. I think Kamala Harris has bumped up a little because of her little spat she had with Biden in the last debate. I think you should look back to when Barack Obama ran against Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, at probably this stage in the election, was probably ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And so
That's
I true. Think this is all, it's way too early. And I think, elections are about the future. And I think what's going to happen is, you know, Joe Biden, just like Hillary Clinton, was sort of perceived as the heir apparent. And I think that, you know, the Democratic Party, I mean, I don't, you know a whole lot more about the Democrats than I do, but I got to think that they're going to look for someone who's going to provide some energy and not look back to someone who's been on the stage for decades.
Mm-hmm. And someone who's more reflective of the Democratic
right.
Party today. And I just think that Joe Biden is far too moderate when compared with the way that the Democratic Party is moving the direction.
Do you think that's true in
today?
Georgia as well? I mean, I understand that there's a feeling nationally that voters, Democratic voters, want a more progressive candidate. But if you focus on, say, the Georgia presidential primary at the end of next March, do you think Georgia voters are also looking for the most progressive candidate? And it was Stacey Abrams and the way she ran her campaign
an example of that? Look, the Democratic Party in Georgia is a progressive, socialist, leaning liberal party.
I don't know about all that. Wait a minute.
No. the more conservative Democrat no longer exists in Georgia. They became Republicans. And the base of the Democratic Party in this state, look at the Senate candidates right now. You have two Senate candidates that are, you know, out there talking about legalization of marijuana. I mean, they're trying to see who could outleft the other. That represents the base of the Democratic Party in this state. And so I think that when they have their presidential primary, you're going to see the base of the party go for a more left-leaning candidate.
So let me get a Democrat. Darshan, do you believe that it we see the numbers for Biden right now. First of all, do you agree that these are name recognition numbers, or do you believe that given his association with President Obama, his appeal to African-American voters, and the fact that he isn't taking positions on the extreme left, do you think these weigh in his favor with Georgia voters, unlike what Julianne and Eric are suggesting?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a variety of things. Obviously, I know most of the people that are on that list, and even knowing most of those people, I am more of a Biden person than most people. People
Why?
Might think,
why?
I consider myself actually more economically moderate than probably most people would expect me to be. Obviously, I'm very socially liberal. But I'm also looking for, and maybe this is because I've had to endure so many years of our current president, but I am looking for somebody who knows what they're doing. And sort of has the experience. Obviously, people are looking for different things, but I think there's a segment of the party that literally, even though they might not appreciate his age or they might not appreciate that he's seen as an establishment, but they literally want somebody who knows what they're doing.
Jim, before we have to take a break, and let's conclude this segment on this survey, but you know, it's interesting that Kamala Harris increasingly is moving up into second or third position to Biden. And in a state like Georgia, in states in the South, where the African-American Democratic vote is so important, you have to, it's going to be interesting to see whether she is able to peel off some of those Biden voters, whether the questions about whether she was a prosecutor who was too tough on African Americans, whether in fact she is the best choice in the, it's going to be interesting to watch how that evolves.
Yeah, and I think it's going to come down to who do you think can perform better in a general election.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting that Bob Trammell, the State House Minority Leader, has already endorsed her. I would still say that if you want to predict what's going to happen in Georgia, keep your eye on South Carolina.
Yeah.
And I will tell you what, the Biden camp is just setting down roots in that area.
Yep. All right, we go ahead one quick.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I know Kamala Harris is trying to have broad appeal, you know, utilizing or leveraging the fact that she was the former AG. But if you look at her policies, she's putting forward very left of center policies. And so if you add up Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders, their percentage in this poll is greater than Joe Biden.
Yes, but only one of them is going to end up being the nominee.
Right.
And so we're going to wait to see where the party stands, Julianne, in terms of its progressive bent once that nominee is selected.
Well, I think that that's true. But I also know that the Democratic Party is really doing a lot of focusing of voter registration among millennials and on college campuses.
Yeah.
And if that is the case, do not expect millennials and college age kids that vote Democratic to want to support Joe Biden.
They don't want Uncle Joe?
They're going to be voting a lot more left of center.
Even you and Darshan have just agreed on an important point. All right, we're going to take a break. Eric Tanenblatt, you said this off the air, so I'm not going to ask. I am going to ask you whether you want to share with us on the air who you think the secret weapon of the Democratic group of candidates might be.
I think it's Pete Buttigieg. And the reason being is that I think he is the sort of the turtle, the slow guy that is building a financial war chest, so he's going to have the staying power. He's smart, and I think he's just going to keep his head down and let these others all battle it out.
All right, there's Tanenblatt. He says Pete Buttigieg will put a mark on this date to see if you predicted it well ahead of time. We got to take a break. We're done with polling for right now. We'll come back, and we have a lot more on Political Rewind.
Are you thinking of getting rid of your old car, truck, or RV? GPB's vehicle donation program is here to help. Donating has never been easier. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup of your vehicle. Just go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR. That's 877-472-1227. And thanks so much.
Beep, 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 yeah.
Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the U.S. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about recent breakthroughs in treating and preventing heart failure with Dr. Heider Verreich, cardiologist and author of the new book, State of the Heart. We'll also talk about how the understanding of healthy blood pressure and good cholesterol is still evolving. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and online at gpbnews.org, or ask your smart speaker to play GPB.
Jim Galloway, Brandon Beach, Republican senator from up in Alpharetta, is one of the candidates running for the Republican nomination for the 6th District Congressional seat, now held by Lucy McBath. One of his opponents, of course, is the woman who used to hold that seat for 15 months after winning a special election, Karen Handel. So Beach hasn't really been aggressively attacking Handel throughout the early stages of this campaign. And yet he went on a radio show that comes out of Washington, D.C., a personality who used to have a show in some station here, I'm not sure which one, and he really went after her in this sort of, in this out-of-town show, which I thought was an odd venue to begin an attack on an opponent.
So have we got sound coming, or?
Oh, yeah. Do you want to hear the sound right away?
Yeah.
All right. Galloway, Tom, move over. Galloway wants to be the co-producer of the show. No, I think that's great. I think, all right, so here's the thing. He was on a Washington, D.C. radio show. The host is a guy named John Fredericks. Are you aware of this guy?
Yes.
Where did he do his show? Here,
I don't even remember.
Atlanta. All right.
But
it's a radio show, but it's also got a heavy internet audience.
Yes, a web audience. Okay, so Fredericks, as you will hear, doesn't much like Karen Handel. And he started criticizing Handel, Fredericks did, and then Beach joined in. And you'll hear from both of them. First, you'll hear Brandon Beach talk about why he thinks Karen Handel's not the one for the nomination. And then you'll hear John Frederick. Let's listen.
Karen won in a special election against a guy named John Ossoff, who didn't, he was right out of college, didn't live in the district. And she barely won that race. And then 15 months later, lost to Lucy McBath, an airline stewardess, an airline flight attendant, who actually lived in Tennessee, and she lost a seat with $8.3 million and an incumbent. And I would agree with you. I think one of the reasons she lost, she distanced herself from President Trump and would not embrace President Trump and his policies.
Also, you know, when Karen ran in the midterms in 2018, she ran away from Trump's tax cut. I mean, this is how bizarre her campaign was. Not only did she run away from the president, and she's a never-Trumper, she ran away from his tax cut. For heaven's sakes, which has been at the core of the biggest economic boom in 50 years. She would be such a disaster again. And aren't the people just tired of her?
Jim, what do you make of both of those guys?
Well, number one, and Eric, you're going to have to help me with my memory here. I think Karen Handel, even though she lost to Lucy McBath, she outperformed Donald Trump in the 6th District in 2018. So there's that. What I find interesting in this race, it's you see it in emails and all these little microaggressions that all the candidates are into right now, is that they are all. This is if you recall when Karen Handel faced John Ossoff in 2017, the big question was, How tightly was she going to tie herself to Donald Trump? And you'll recall that I think at one Trump rally, she kind of was backstage and had a photograph with him.
Yes.
And in this race, it's going to be, how closely can you tie yourself to Trump? And you see Marjorie Greene Taylor doing it. You see Brandon Beach doing it. And you see Karen Handel doing it.
Yeah. Julianne, I... Brandon Beach, you work at the legislature. You do a lot of lobbying down at the legislature. Brandon Beach is not the kind of guy you would normally think would pick up on an attack that is so strident at this point. It does tell me something about where campaigning is headed this election cycle more than ever. But I don't think it's quite true. I don't think she distanced herself from Trump. And to the best of my recollection, she did not oppose the Trump tax cuts. Your take on this?
Well, first of all, she ran for the 6th congressional district. She didn't, you know, she wasn't running as a running mate with Donald Trump. She was running for her own seat. So that being said, there was a recent NRCC poll that shows her as the only Republican primary candidate that could beat McBath at 46% to 42%. So when you couple that with the fact that, let's see, she raised $550,000 in 100 days, which is cumulatively more than Beach.
That's a number that's been pumped a little bit. But
well, she does have double the primary cash on hand. And most of his cash is general cash. So I think that a lot of what you're seeing as far as the primary back and forth has to do with the fact that she's ahead in the polls.
Eric?
Well, a couple things. First of all, you know, and I have two distinguished members of the media here, but sometimes when you're being interviewed, you can get caught up in what the interviewer is saying. And so, you know, you learn.
We call it being led.
Yes. And so I think some of that may have happened. And, you know, I don't know that Brandon was able to fact check. I should also point out that, you know, in fairness to Karen, that when she ran in that Ossoff race, she had to run a primary runoff before she got to the special election. And so that was not. No, there was no runoff.
It was just a special election, and then a runoff, special election runoff.
Yeah. Okay,
and the most expensive in history.
Right, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, but she had to be the Republican in that runoff. I mean, it was a nonpartisan special election.
Right, right.
First two vote getters, so she had to beat back all the others. So, you know, she had to then replace her coffers, and yes, it was the most expensive. I think, look, to win the primary in this district, clearly Brandon is trying to outright Karen, and you know you're going to have more Trump supporters in the primary. It's going to be a little different in that district when you get into the general election.
Well, what's interesting about Brandon Beach is, and he does it in this interview as well, until perhaps he's led by this guy, if that's how you want to frame this, fine, is he does talk about that how involved he was with infrastructure, building roads, and how interested he was in mass transit when he was in the legislature. And he says that's an important part of what he wants to run on. And so this turn to the right and this kind of harsh attack, as I said, Jim, strikes me as an example of where we're all headed in 2020.
This is the difficulty the Republicans are going to have in this contest, is threading that needle, is proving that they are ideologically pure as far as the Trump litmus test is concerned. But you've also got this is a very practical population of Republicans here. They want to see things work, and that's where Beach was going with his infrastructure stuff.
That's right, Darshan. I want to make one more point. We're going to get to another break in a sec, but I'll tell you what you know really caught my attention. And Republicans want women. Julianne wants women to go to the Republican Party. I get it. She's a former stewardess. As if it's a demeaning thing that she worked in the industry. And then he corrects me. She was a stewardess, a flight attendant. I've got to say that to me, that seemed not what Brandon Beach is kind of like as a person, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously, even though I'm in the House and he's in the Senate, I am surprised by that. And to tell you the truth, we have one of the most effective legislators, Representative Pam Dickerson, is also a flight attendant.
Yeah.
She has been effective in passing cybersecurity bills and all types of things. So this is just another example of making sure that the party that women affiliate with, that they recognize the worth that
Julianne, you think that I'm picking up on something that isn't there?
I
saw your face.
I do. I think that most certainly he was trying to get Beach to say some things, but
well, no, it was Beach who said she's a former stewardess.
I apologize. I thought it was John Fredericks that said that.
I think that was just a slip of the tongue. I don't think, look, I know Brandon. Brandon is a good guy, and Brandon is not, He corrected himself afterwards. I think that's a generation.
But he still made it seem like being a flight attendant is under.
Yes.
It's not about the words. It's about him saying that profession is like you can't possibly govern because you're a flight attendant.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think he's like that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Calloway, did you want to weigh in or do you want to be quiet?
No, I'm staying out of this one. I'm far away.
Let's do this. Let's get our final break, the show out of the way, and come back with more on Political Rewind.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
The key to replacing fossil fuels with solar and wind energy on a grand scale comes down to batteries. Scientists are working to develop batteries that are both good and cheap.
We know that our time is limited, so we are dedicated to carrying out even basic research with much greater urgency than in the past.
I'm Elsa Chang. Why we need batteries to slow climate change this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 today on GPB and online at gpbnews.org.
Jim Galloway, let's take up one issue fairly quickly because we've certainly spent a lot of time over the months, and so has the AJC, talking about some of the problems David Ralston, as Speaker of the House, has been running into. Your paper, your colleagues investigated quite some time ago now, the fact that he took advantage of the ability that a legislator, and certainly he as Speaker of the House, have as lawyers to delay trials on the basis that they have legislative business that makes that necessary. It got to be such a major issue that the Speaker eventually had to take the floor, come down to the well, and say, I don't think I did anything wrong, but I'm promoting rules. I'll support a bill that will change the way things are done.
Right. He promised he would not take any more criminal cases until the ones that had been delayed were settled. This is the last one.
Unfortunately, it's one that your paper again reported over the weekend.
It's a little troubling.
Why?
Right. This is a case that's been delayed for what?
14 years.
And basically an evangelical
traveling preacher
who molested a young lady won't get any jail time.
14 years later, Darshan, he has now admitted that he says I groped her. And what it's done is, and the AJC, you know, has kept investigating this. You serve in his body. Do you think the Speaker of the House is, as these stories continue to be reported, does he face any genuine trouble in holding on either to his position as House Speaker or in his reelection campaign?
Well, I can't speak to his reelection campaign because I don't know anything about his district. All I can give is the sentiments in the House. And listen, I'm a lawyer legislator just like the Speaker is. And obviously I can give you the perspective of the people that are sort of in my circle that I speak to. But I think that there is much more than the beginning of session. Or much more than the end of session. At first, I just thought that this was going to be one of these things that blows over because ever since I've been elected 8 years ago, there's always been a story and it always blows over. But this year, something was different and it stuck and it compounded. And I've never seen anything like this.
Well, that's what I'm
over
wondering.
The 8 years.
Jim, I think what you're going to see is a test case, if you will. And it's a September 3rd. Special election to fill the House seat of David Stover, Stovall, a Republican out of Noonan. And you've got, right now, you've got three Republicans. You've got Marcy Sackerson, Philip Singleton, and Nina Blackwell Weldon there. And you have a Democrat, Jill Prouty. If the Democrat uses Ralston, if one of the Republicans use Ralston to go after another candidate, say condemning one or the other for support, I think that's going to matter a whole lot.
All right, we're going to watch that. But you know what's interesting about this, Julianne, is that Ralston has been, and I think Darshan would agree with me, but I'll ask you first. Ralston has been pretty well received by both Democrats and Republicans in the House because he's considered pretty fair-minded. He has been he's stopped some of the legislation that some think was too extreme in the Senate. I would think there are probably some conservative Republicans who have more problems with Ralston than the Democrats in the body. So this isn't really a partisan issue in many ways, is it?
Well, ultimately, when it comes to the speaker, it's up to the Republican caucus. But taking the speaker and putting him aside, what is sad about the situation to me is that there is a 14-year-old child who, in this case, that is being used as political ping pong right now. And that is extremely unfair. And I would really love to ask an attorney since the legislature is here.
Yeah.
Yeah. How this right to put off these court cases, doesn't that interfere with the right to a speedy trial? I mean, for the victim as well as the accused.
Yeah, so the statute that was used is state law, and essentially mandates that at least cases that are going on the state level be put off until a certain time after the session. I have not examined it because I don't do criminal law at all. I don't go to court at all. So I haven't had that that comparison or that question come up. But as you know, when we talk about a speedy trial, I always put it in quotes because who gets to decide what a speedy trial is, right? So, but that's obviously a very good question. And we did end up passing a bill that essentially now, if you request it, the opposing counsel or the DA or whoever has a certain time period by which to object to you using what we call legislative leave. Before, it was almost mandated, like you had to give them to. So that was the change that you're talking about.
Eric, one of the things about this story that becomes more difficult, I think, to for the speaker is the family of this girl, and she is still a girl, say that her life was just completely upended by this, that she hasn't been the same ever since. So, you know, when there's a victim presented, it always makes a story more difficult. But let me go back to the question I asked generally. Ralston's been well-liked as speaker, and there are a lot of reasons why people, I think, on both sides of the aisle would like to see him stay on, aren't there?
Well, sure. And I mean, after this last election, he was the one with the institutional knowledge because we elected a new governor and a new lieutenant governor. And he has done a very effective job as speaker. That's not an easy job because you're the speaker of the whole House. You're not just that you're elected by the members of, you know, the Republican caucus and then the entire House. But, you know, you're the speaker for the whole House. And it's a difficult, you know, needle the thread, and he has effectively done it. And I think if you talk to Democrats, and I got one sitting right here, you know, I think you probably have had a good experience over the 8 years in the House in terms of dealing with the speaker. You may not have agreed with him all the time, but my sense is he's probably treated you with respect.
Mm-hmm. True?
I would definitely agree with that.
All right. Jim, we're almost out of time. We had two incidents over the weekend that show us just how on edge everybody is as a result of a terrible week last week in which some believe that President Trump was expressing racist sentiments. Many people do. Others say that's not true at all. I don't want to get into that part of it again, but I do say out in Gwinnett County, you had the vice chair of the Gwinnett Democratic Party having bumper stickers at a public parking lot. She comes out, her pro-Democratic bumper stickers are covered by an I Heart Trump bumper sticker, and the driver and the guy who apparently put those there, according to Gwinnett police investigation, then followed her in her car for a number of miles.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this incident out in West Cobb County, where Erica Thomas, state rep, says that a man confronted her because she was in a 10 items or less line with too many items and told her to go back where she came from. He says that's not what he said. She's changed her story. Come on. I don't know what the truth is on these things, but it sure says we're on edge.
Yeah, especially in this latter one with out in Cobb County, which is out in my territory.
Yeah.
And listen, if you know, there's a lot of he said, she said stuff, and you got promises, oh, we can provide witnesses. I'd really, I'd want to get past this one. I can tell you that the agreement there is agreement that there was an altercation in which a white fellow said some unpleasant things to a pregnant woman who was standing in line with what he thought were too many items in the express lane.
He calls himself a Democrat, and he was born in Cuba.
I don't care about that. Right. I don't care about that. I mean, what I care is somebody going off. On another fellow human being over something the average grocery store employee does not care
Darshan,
about.
Darshan, you're nodding.
Right. I think that's the root of it. It's like, let's forget about, you know, the he said, she said stuff. The fact that after this was reported, so many people totally believed that this could happen in America and responded so viscerally. I mean, you had the state GOP that sent out a horrible email, and then you had Democrats rallying to her side. The fact that we are at this point where we believe that something like this could happen in America is something I'd never
think of. But it's also a case, Julianne, where we're also eager to jump to the conclusions that support our own partisan views, and that's what troubles me deeply about this sort of thing. Both sides.
Well, I'm part of the state GOP, and I didn't see any email that was sent out at
all. I can send it to you.
That would be great. I would really love to see it.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of any official state email in which they said what, basically.
I'll have to pull it up.
All right, we'll see. We'll follow up on this.
But we are in a definite vitriolic environment on both sides of the aisle. I think I've explained to you things that have happened to my daughter at her school. And when she had to testify before the State Senate Higher Education Committee on the treatment of conservative students on college campuses in Georgia. And after one of her classes one day, there were some left-leaning activists, students waiting for her outside of one of her classes that shouted things at her and followed her to her car. So, I mean, this happens, and it is extremely unfortunate and unacceptable.
But it doesn't help, and I know we're about to run out of time, so I can't even go there. I can't even talk to you about whether President Trump encourages this sort of behavior or not, but I can do this, Eric. You're in a law firm with Democrats and Republicans. You figure out a way to talk amicably, to work together collegially, every single day. How do we do it?
Well, I think people just need to stop talking past each other. And, I've always been, from a policy standpoint, a big believer that the competition of ideas is a good thing and that the best ideas bubble up. I think we've gotten a little too personal right now. And I think everyone just needs to tone it down.
All right. I said it the other day on this show. I just can't remember a time when I was sadder about the discourse in this country than I am today. And you know what? When I say that in here, you all nod, because I think we all feel exactly the same, whether we're working on behalf of President Trump's reelection, hoping that he doesn't get reelected. And I appreciate that you come into this studio, everybody, and you talk amicably and respectfully with one another. And it makes me feel good that that's what this show is able to send out to listeners. Okay, I have done enough preaching in the last few days on this show. I promise it's time to get past that. And we'll be back at 2 o'clock tomorrow when we will get past that. This is Political Rewind. See you then.